This is episode number 28 with former corporate exec turned entrepreneur, John Ostenson. Welcome to the Path to Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Wes Barefoot, where it's my mission to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing business owners take control of their lives and create freedom for themselves through business ownership. Each episode, I'll be exploring the strategies and tactics of other successful entrepreneurs that have created freedom in their own lives while sharing what I'm learning along my own path to freedom. I'm glad you're here. Let's drop in. My guest today is John Ostenson. John has a fascinating story that he shares with us on the podcast today. He explains how he went from a very comfortable, high-paying corporate job into a life of entrepreneurship and found himself immersed in the world of franchising. Today, John's involved in numerous franchise businesses as a franchisee. He's also involved in other non-franchise businesses, some of which provide services to franchisors, as well as investment opportunities for people looking for more of a passive investment opportunity in the franchising space. John also talks about how it's so important for aspiring entrepreneurs to make a distinguishment between building a business that works for you and trading your time for money. John's got a great story and shares a ton of fantastic insight and advice with us in this episode. So with that, we'll go ahead and drop in with my good friend, John Ostenson. I know some people listening to this know you and are probably familiar with you, but for anyone that may not be, give us a brief kind of introduction and kind of who John Ostenson is.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks again for having me. Excited to be here, and you've got such a cool thing going. So my story in the 30-second spiel, based here in Atlanta, Georgia. I lived here most of my life. Started off from a career standpoint, when I left the University of Georgia, I went to work for Accenture, so I was in consulting, did some neat international projects. I ultimately went back to grad school, and then after that, I went to sell baby clothes. Never thought I'd be in the...
That's what you grew up dreaming of doing, right? Selling baby clothes?
It's funny how the right role will take you to all sorts of industries, and just had a neat experience with Carter's and Oshkosh B'gosh. Ended up staying there 10 years. And that's a big part of the story here that, had the opportunity to work for the president and get to do some neat things with a big public company. But they do put the golden handcuffs on you. And did that, broke free about a decade in, 10 years in, and moved over to Shelf Genie, had the opportunity to lead the support teams there, working with Alan Young, the founder. And he and I then work with the board to spin off a portion, and continually evolved over the last few years, and now serve as a consultant with a franchise consulting company, and then also with Frambridge Capital. I'm partners with two other guys, and we are franchise owners ourselves. So we're franchisees of three different brands. I personally have another brand outside of that, but it's our goal to continue to grow these small businesses that become larger businesses and have synergies and economies of scale. And can lead to passive income, which I think a lot of your listeners probably care a lot about. It's about not trading time for money, and it's hard to do that in the corporate world.
Well put. I like that, not trading time for money, and I want to kind of unpack that a little bit more. And everything you just mentioned, we catch up every couple months, try to stay in touch, and I love catching up with you because every time I talk to you, you've got something new going on. I mean, you've got a lot of different, in my opinion, awesome things that you're working on, that you're involved in. And I would mention, even though you graduated from Georgia, you're a huge LSU Tiger fan, right?
What was that? You're
all right, we'll leave that alone. Even though SEC football starts tomorrow as of the day of recording this. So I should have thought ahead and put an LSU shirt on. But anyways, I digress from that. So, you mentioned a little bit about your career in corporate America, and you didn't come right out and say it. I'll say it for you. I mean, you had a very successful career in corporate America. I mean, as you mentioned, worked for a large publicly traded company, definitely worked your way up the ladder with the Carters and the Oshkosh B'gosh, I can't say that, companies. So what was it that, you know, about that 10-year mark kind of got you thinking, hey, maybe I don't want to continue trying to climb this corporate ladder. Maybe I want to kind of branch out and explore a more entrepreneurial path, because a lot of people in your situation would have rode that gravy train.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. I'm just now thinking about this. It wasn't an instant decision. Now, most decisions, sure, in my career, most even who I married, oftentimes it's like when you know, you know, and I make split, yeah, decisions, and they worked out for the most part pretty well. But no, had a good run with Carter's. I'd say I started getting that 7-year itch, you uh-huh. know, to be candid, and, you know, but then every year the stock options were best, and, you know, the bonuses would come around, and the company did well, and they were very generous, and it made it hard to leave. So very thankful and grateful for the time that we had there, great leadership team and such. But yeah, I'd say I started thinking about it probably year 7, and I always knew that I wanted to do something a little more entrepreneurial, but mm-hmm. it's hard to leave. You got young kids, you know, things are going well. But ultimately at the 10-year mark, is actually 10 and a half years in, that I'd started talking to private equity firms and looking around at different options. Honestly, didn't have franchising on my radar at that time. It was really through connections that ultimately landed me with Shelf Genie, working with Alan and team. And really, that's where I fell in love with franchising, and seeing, you know, how created such an opportunity for so many out there that, you know, aren't sitting around with that next great Google or Amazon idea. And the, right, tech startups that we all know are so risky. Yeah. And this presented such a, not risk-free, but more risk-averse option. And the more I got into it, the more my thinking evolved, and just opportunities that I've seen in the market that kind of lead me to where I am now.
I was going to ask if, you know, as you were kind of transitioning out of corporate America, if you kind of had this idea of going into franchising. It sounds like that, as you said, wasn't really on your radar. And it's so interesting to me, like, you know, once you get involved in franchising, it's kind of a small, tight-knit community. But just about everyone you talk to in franchising, their story goes something similar to yours. They kind of fell backwards into it, but there's also that addition, which is what you said, I fell in love with franchising. And for me, it was the exact same. Had no idea that I was going to, you know, end up getting involved in franchising the way I have. Fell backwards into it, but I was fascinated with it as a way of doing business, you know, as soon as I started understanding how it works. So, you know, tell us a little bit more about your kind of involvement in franchising, and what are some of the biggest things that you've learned kind of coming out of corporate America, understanding that world, and then kind of immersing yourself in the world of franchising, and what are some of the similarities maybe? And then also, what are some of the biggest differences that you've learned over the last few years?
Yeah, you know, it really was a path to freedom. But I will say, and I tell my wife this all the time, I'm the hardest boss I've ever had. And Friday, I left the office at noon. I called my wife and said, hey, the boss told me I've been doing a good job. He's giving me the afternoon off. Took her and, you know, that's what I found. So, you know, I'd say that's something I struggle with sometimes, is being able to turn it off. But the gratification of being able to work on your own terms. There used to be this tension and stress that I would carry with me. You know, and there's still tension and stress of different types. And did the deal go through, did it not? But still, not knowing that you're not beholden to someone above you necessarily in the corporate hierarchy does have a sense of freedom. But no, for me, jumping into business ownership would have been different, most likely, if I hadn't had the training I'd had along the way. And I think that I really value that, value the relationships and the processes that franchising presents. And, you know, what I found out there's a huge education component around franchising. You know, mm-hmm. like so many others, I thought Subway, McDonald's, QSRs, so I thought of franchising. And while that's a big piece of it, there's so many dozens of industries and opportunities that, you know, nearly every conversation I have each day with clients, and I share with them the opportunities or with investors and types of returns you can make, you just see that light bulb go off in the same way it did for me.
Yeah, it is. It's to your point, most people think fast food, QSR, which stands for quick service restaurants. You know, we all know those brands. There's so much more to it. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find an industry that has not been dramatically impacted, I would argue in a positive way, by franchising, but it's not what's on most people's radars. And to me, that's one of the most enjoyable aspects of, you know, what we do as franchise consultants and helping people find franchise opportunities that are likely to be a good fit for them. very rarely do I bring, you know, them an opportunity that I think is worth them taking a closer look at. That's something that they would have probably stumbled across on their own. You know, usually it's something that, you know, was so far off their radar, they would have never looked at it on their own. And to me, that's a lot of fun, especially if you're meeting with someone in person or you're on a Zoom call and you can kind of see their facial expression where you're like, hey, you're going to think I'm crazy, but this is a business I think you should look at, and here's why. I don't know. I get a lot of enjoyment out of that. And many times people realize that something they never would have thought was a good fit for them is. And I mean, that was definitely the case for Kelly and I with Shelf Genie. I mean, if you would have told me a couple years before I got involved with Shelf Genie and we ended up buying our franchise that I was going to own a custom shelving business, I would have laughed at you. I mean, I don't know anything about shelving, but lo and behold, it was a great fit. So I want to, you know, pick your brain a little bit, because I know this is something that is very common out there, right? Everything you just described in terms of, you know, kind of having this entrepreneurial itch, you know, having these kind of thoughts about breaking away from corporate America, doing your own thing. I mean, I think that resonates with a lot of people out there. I mean, I went through it myself, but a lot of people never do it. They never take that leap, right? And it's certainly a risk. I would argue it's not as risky as putting all of your livelihood in the hands of an employer, but to most people, that's a hard leap to make. So, you know, how did you get the confidence to actually walk away from, as you said, a very good paying job, stock options? I mean, the whole, you know, kind of what most people are working 30, 40 years to try to get to. How'd you get the confidence to say, you know what, I'm going to go try something else. I'm going to go, you know, start this entrepreneurial chapter of my life.
Yeah, you know, I was very fortunate. I had a supportive spouse, and she, you know, she kind of said, "Are you sure about this? All right, but, you know." Yeah. And but I think she knows me well enough to know that the effort would be there. And I was blessed that we had saved up and done okay to the point where, you know, we could take time if things happen.
Sure.
And so, you know, I wouldn't say it was just jumping off the diving board to the deep end immediately, but you know, it was a calculated risk. And
yep.
One thing I'd point out is franchising is not right for everyone. I mean, admittedly, yeah, you and I are biased because we've seen the success stories out there, but I'm a member of the Entrepreneurs Organization, and, you know, these are people that largely started their own businesses, and, you know, I'm drawn to that. It's their way of thinking, but a lot of them are interested in franchising on the side, and oftentimes what I have to end up telling them is, hey, you're too entrepreneurial.
Can't
stay within the bounds. But then I've got others that say, hey, I love the idea of not having to come up with it myself, and someone's already thought about it and proven it. So, and a lot of them are looking to franchise their businesses, which is a great way to scale and you know, using other people's money.
Definitely.
But what I do tell them is, hey, your day-to-day changes, because if someone is paying to buy into your franchise system, you got to keep the kids happy.
They're going to support them. Yeah.
You as a parent. So your day-to-day definitely changes.
I hope you still have some stock in Carter's, because the Barefoot household with number two on the way due in December is single-handedly making that Carter stock go up. I can guarantee it. So
you can't avoid them.
Bags and bags and bags of clothes. But no, to your point, I mean, there's definitely such a thing as too entrepreneurial of a person to where a franchise is going to make sense, because the value in a franchise, and I have this conversation with people all the time, I know you do too, the value in a franchise is in large part the systems and the processes. And so in order to actually see any value from that, you have to be willing to follow those systems and those processes. And someone that's very entrepreneurial, you know, may struggle with that. And then on the flip side of that, business ownership in general, whether it's through a franchise or your standalone business or whatever, is not for everyone either.
Exactly.
And I've reiterated that numerous times on the podcast. You know, when we talk about finding the courage to, you know, take that jump into entrepreneurship, you know, and not let the fear, uncertainty, and doubt hold you back from kind of chasing what you really want to do with your life. We're not talking to everyone. If you don't have any interest in being an entrepreneur, that's perfectly fine. It's definitely not for everyone. We're speaking to the people that have that entrepreneurial itch and are having trouble getting there to where they're actually taking some action, you know, towards that. I tell people, though, you know, even if you are entrepreneurial and if you've been successful, I mean, I just helped a guy get into a franchise that started a couple of tech businesses on his own. And, you know, he was a little bit iffy on franchising. He knew some people that had done well with franchises. And I said, look at it this way. Look, there's no question that you have what it takes to start something and build it from scratch. You've done it. You've demonstrated that. A good franchise for someone like you, it's just going to give you the ability to run a lot quicker than you would if you wanted to try and build something from the ground up again.
Yeah.
Sure, you could, but would you rather do that over a 5, 6, 7, 10-year period, or would you rather get into the right franchise, hit the ground running, and put yourself in a position to start seeing some cash flow a heck of a lot quicker than if you're building something from the ground up? And I think that was in one of our early conversations. That's where the light bulb came on for him. And that's kind of how I look at it for a lot of people. And then for other people that are not as entrepreneurial, a franchise can be a great thing because the systems and the processes are there.
Yeah, no, and I love, you know, hearing you say that. I think for you, you know, you bring a lot of credibility and, you know, and to a degree I do as well, having been both of us on the franchisor side. Mm-hmm. We now both have sipped the Kool-Aid to the degree we bought into franchises.
Yeah.
And not just one, but we're actually expanding and going bigger. So, you know, I think that we've seen firsthand not only other successes and stories and challenges at times, and there are some where it doesn't work out, but we've also kind of lived it in their shoes.
No doubt. And the other thing worth noting, without spending a ton of time on it, is buying a franchise doesn't mean it happens for you. You know, there's plenty of unsuccessful franchisees out there, and more times than not, that's a result of the effort of the franchise owner just not being there, not being willing to put in the work. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're taking shortcuts and you're not having to work hard. It just means you're working smarter from day one. You know, one of the ways I like to put it to people is, you know, part of what you're getting in exchange for a franchise fee to become a franchisee is you're getting to avoid making mistakes that the franchisor and other franchisees have already made. But you're still going to have to put in the work. There's no way around that. This is not a, you know, a get rich quick overnight type of thing that we're talking about. Wes here. You may have noticed there's a franchising theme to this podcast. And that's because franchising's had a massive impact on my life. And it's the very reason I'm walking my own path to freedom. In fact, one of my companies is a franchise consulting company where I work with people to help them understand franchising and determine if it might be a good fit for them. And if it is something they want to explore, then I help them navigate the entire investigative process and ultimately find a franchise business that's a great match for them. You know, the fact of the matter is there are thousands and thousands of franchise businesses out there today. And like anything, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Even out of the many, many great franchise companies, not every one of them would necessarily be a good fit for you. You know, buying a franchise is a huge decision. And you don't want to wing it. I've helped many people buy franchise businesses over the years, and my wife and I have bought and owned franchises today, and we plan to keep investing in franchise businesses. I love helping people understand this process and help them find a business that's going to be a great fit for them and help them accomplish their goals and ultimately create that freedom in their life that we're all looking for. The best part of all of this is that my services are free to the people I work with. And while I do love to contribute to charities and other great causes, I'm not a nonprofit. I'm compensated by the franchise companies I work with when I introduce them to someone that ends up becoming one of their franchisees. It's very similar to real estate, but with franchises. I have the privilege of working with hundreds and hundreds of the best franchise companies out there across practically every industry. So I can be absolutely confident that when I recommend someone to look at a franchise company, I'm introducing them to a very credible and proven company with a solid business model and great support. So if you think you might be interested in learning more about franchising and seeing if it might be right for you, I'd love to speak with you. Get in touch with me by email at wes@path2freedom.com. path2frdm.com, and also check out my website at path2freedom.com, spelled the same way, where I've got a ton of resources, both franchise and non-franchise related, that will help you start down your own path to freedom. And of course, subscribe to and follow the podcast for more great advice about business ownership. And if you know anyone else that might be interested in speaking with me, please share this podcast with them. Thanks for listening to my shameless plug. Now let's drop back into the episode. One thing, and then I want to have you speak a little bit more to some of what you're currently working on, but you mentioned your wife earlier and her being supportive, and I think that's a common challenge for a lot of people, male or female, that have a significant other, you know, when they're considering getting into business for themselves. So, you know, you said your wife was supportive. My wife was very supportive when I left, you know, my W-2 job. What did you kind of have to do though to really get her comfortable with that? Because I'm sure there had to be some hesitation, and she wasn't as close to, you know, some of the people and some of the contacts and stuff that you were tapping into as you were making this transition. So, I mean, was there any kind of convincing that had to be done, or did she just kind of say, "Hey, I trust you, go do your thing"?
Yeah. Well, and first off, I'd say when Wes alludes to his wife Kelly. You know that term about punting your coverage. I mean, that was,
yeah.
And that's where it came from. So, no, she's great.
Not the first time that's come up on the podcast either. I married up everyone, and I look at that as a good thing. I just feel bad for her.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll leave it at that. No, you know, my wife was supportive. I mean, we've been married 12 years. You know, I turned 40 this year. So it wasn't done overnight either. I had to build the trust.
Yeah.
You know, and again, the calculated risk she's allowed me to take, and we've taken them on the residential side with real estate investments we've made, and that's kind of her area of expertise. So I think there's kind of a give and take, and you know, so much that goes into that. It's kind of a loaded question, but it's definitely helps to have support from your spouse, from your community, you know, those that you're closest to, because if you don't, then you're fighting a battle on multiple fronts. I mean,
yeah.
I've always been of the mindset, you know, and this is marriage advice here to any unmarried listeners, but you're out there fighting all day and working hard in the marketplace. When you come home at night and you're worn out, you got to have someone that helps build you up so you can go fight the next day, not someone that brings you further down. So,
it's a good point. And, you know, I've been asked about this, by people that I've worked with who maybe didn't have a spouse that was quite as supportive. And they're like, "Hey, how do you handle this?" And I mean, obviously there's no magic answer. A lot of it has to do with, you know, the people involved in the relationship. I think the biggest thing is just good, clear communication, right? If you have a spouse or a significant other that's not even fully aware of, you know, your goal and your desire to get into business for themselves, for yourself, they're going to be blindsided when you're like, "Hey, so I'm thinking about leaving my job. What do you think? Are you cool with that?" They're going to be like, "What? Where is this coming out of left field?" So, you know, you got to have communication. You got to have conversations about it. You know, if I'm helping someone investigate franchises, even if their spouse or significant other is not planning to be involved in the business at all, I'm always encouraging them, "Hey, go through the consultation part of the process with me. You know, your input is just as important as the person who's going to be actually running the business. When you get to the point of actually talking to franchise companies, both of you be on the calls, right? That way you're both getting the same information. Nothing's being lost in translation. Nothing's going to slip through the cracks. And that way you're on the same page and you're able to make a decision together. Because to your point, if one person's in favor and the other's not, I mean, it's just, it's not a recipe for success. So, well, anyways,
I think you and I both bought into businesses that our wives would support, you know, of
sure.
four different brands that I'm a partner in. One of them is a home cleaning franchise, and they were there at 8:30 this morning cleaning the house. That always helps too.
Definitely. Yeah. Something where the wife can participate or partake, I guess, of the service or the product, definitely does help. That's a fair point. So, on that note, you know, tell us a little bit more about what you're involved in right now. And it should be noted too that, you know, you are a franchisee in several businesses. You have a consulting business, but, you know, you've also over the years had some businesses that you've started or co-founded that are maybe in the franchising space, but are not actual franchises themselves. So you do have experience at this point of starting something from scratch, as well as investing in franchise businesses as a franchisee, which I think gives you a very balanced perspective. So just give us a little more information on kind of, you know, what you're actively working on today.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm a very future-oriented person, which sometimes creates a challenge to live in the present. There's always something I'm working on today and something I'll be working on tomorrow. So today, I am at least a 33% or more partner in four different franchise brands here in the Atlanta market, a driveway repair company, a home cleaning franchise, a pool cleaning franchise, and carpet cleaning franchise. So you know, our thesis is being able to get the lower cost of acquisition due to referrals on the front end, economies of scale with the team on the back end, and we'll look to grow that. I'm not intimately involved in the day-to-day, and I think that's a realization I came to personally was I don't love leading a large operations team. I'd much rather work with clients, work with investors on that side of the house.
You and me both.
Yeah, so got that going, but I'd say that takes up probably less than 20% of my week right now. As you mentioned, I do the consulting work, which probably takes up another 40%, and then that final 40% of the working hours or it's all working hours when you're a business owner, in a good way. But it is where we're heading, and that is pulling together. I see this dynamic in the market of more capital on the sidelines than we've had at any point in recent history.
Yeah.
Stock market run-up, low interest rates, where are you going to invest? You know, the real estate, you can only do so much, put some money in gold, what have you. You know, baseball cards, whatever your poison is. But then at the other end, I've got clients, I see other candidates in the market that need funding. And right now it's either a 401k rollover, self-funded, or friends and family, or oftentimes an SBA loan.
Which has been a disaster here lately. COVID's got a lot to do with that, and I'm sure it'll kind of change, but SBA has been a less reliable option over the last 6 months than it historically has been.
And for some people, I mean, interest rates, it could be a good option, but others say, hey, I don't love the idea of a personal guarantee. I'd much rather get some equity backers in here.
Yeah.
It's not right for everyone, but for a lot of people out there, they say, hey, I'd love to get a rich uncle, but I don't have a rich uncle. And so at the same time, all this capital on the sidelines, we have a lot of investors looking for home. They don't necessarily want to buy a franchise at their stage of life and what they have going on, but they mm-hmm. want to participate. So I'm creating an avenue in which I'm talking to investor groups with franchising as an asset, kind of being the headline, and I'm playing matchmaker. Now, we're only a few deals into this. I've personally participated in some, my partner has, but that's where I see a lot of the opportunity going that I'm focused on.
Well, I mean, I think it's brilliant. We were talking a little bit about this before we started recording. You're really giving a new passive investment opportunity for people that are at financially at a point where they're looking for somewhere to invest their money in more of a passive way, right? They're not looking to roll up their sleeves and go, you know, operate the day-to-day of a business or even necessarily directly manage a team of people that's handling the day-to-day of a business, but it's another option, right? Say, diversify your portfolio a bit, right? Invest in not at the franchisor level, but at the franchisee level. And to me, I think it's a brilliant idea. And to your point, I mean, there is a lot of capital on the sidelines. And, you know, I've kind of coming into my consulting business, I'm younger than a lot of the franchise consultants out there. I guess technically I'm a millennial. I don't know. But kind of one of my thoughts was, you know, there's a lot of people kind of in my age category that would be amazing business owners and have that kind of drive, that entrepreneurial itch, but because they're just not, you know, far enough along in life in their career, they may not have had enough time to build up some of the assets and the liquidity and the net worth to be financially qualified to even get an SBA loan or some of the other most common funding mechanisms for franchise, but they're willing to put in the work. And so if they can get someone that does have the resources that's willing to invest in them, and then they can earn ownership through sweat equity. And that's a big part of how Kelly and I got into our first franchise. And it's worked out great for us. It's worked out great for our business partner. We've gone on to do more deals together in a similar manner. But so I think that's, you know, that's a great avenue, not only for people looking to invest their money, but for maybe some younger entrepreneurial minded people that just don't have the capital or the assets to go out and do it on their own.
110%. Agree with every word.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I definitely want to, you know, hear more about this as you kind of get it ramped up and, you know, want to see where this goes. Cause I think it's a really good idea and something that's needed. So, You know, you mentioned some of the franchise brands that, you know, you've invested in yourself. And you said a cleaning company, a driveway repair company, a pool cleaning company. What's the other one? You're killing mosquitoes?
What else are you doing?
Carpet cleaning.
Hey, riches in the niches, right? It's the non-sexy businesses, yeah?
That's exactly what I was getting at, right? Because
essential services, baby.
Yeah, I mean, as like one of the criteria for you has got to be, all right, what's the least sexy business we can find, and let's go after that. But it's for good reason, right? I mean, these are businesses, or I should say these are services that are tried and true. They tend to be a lot more resilient during whatever type of economic conditions, you know, may be going on at the time. So expand on that a little bit for me, though. I mean, what are some of the key criteria that, you know, you and the groups that you've partnered with are looking for when you're evaluating, you know, different franchise opportunities to personally invest in?
Yeah, like anyone else out there, we want to know what the ROI potential is. For us, you know, I don't know that home cleaning would have been our number one choice, but what we did was we said, hey, for our strategy of where we're going, we want to have 10 to 15 complementary brands here in Atlanta and services. And we said, hey, home cleaning allows us to get in the door at least once or twice a month, build a relationship, eyes and ears on the ground, what's needed. Oh, have you thought about repairing that driveway? You know, and so that was, that again, that's part of our thesis. As far as the selection criteria, so home cleaning, maid service, there are a lot of options out there.
Sure.
In that, we start out interviewing 5 to 6 brands. Again, like you, I'm privy to the deal flow, which allows us to kind of look behind the covers. Mm-hmm. So we looked at territory availability quickly, narrowed it down to maybe 4. And then we really spent a lot of time with the teams behind those. We went through several discovery days through the process, wanted to educate ourselves. And for us, we found that maid service, maid is part of the term of every cleaning service out there. But when you look at Google searches, people search more for home cleaning than they do for maid service. So we loved Home Clean Heroes.
Right.
Buzz Brands, Virginia Beach. And we know the team behind that. Big fans of Kevin Wilson, Joe DeLatte. Yeah. And just see that as in their sister brand of Pool Scouts, which we're also big fans of. So it made the decision for us fairly easy.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I'd heard the same kind of logic on a webinar a few months ago that, to your point, a lot of the cleaning service franchises out there have the name Maid incorporated into it. And, you know, I think Home Clean Heroes did some market research and some polling or what have you. And they kind of came back as like, consumers don't really like the idea of having a maid come into their house. They want someone to come in and clean their house, but they don't want to tell people like, hey, the maid just left. But yeah, it's important to understand who's behind the brand. One thing that I really try to stress with people that I'm working with is, you know, you've got to view owning a franchise as a partnership with the franchisor. So number one thing that a lot of people don't seem to realize is, you know, yeah, you're kind of interviewing these brands to understand how it all works, what you're getting as a franchisee, where's the value. You're doing your due diligence, you're vetting them, but a good franchise brands, they're vetting you just as hard. Right, they're looking to you. They're trying to get to know you just as much to figure out if they think you're a good fit for their brand. You know, do you have what it takes to be successful as a franchisee? Are you going to represent their brand the right way? And that's lost on a lot of people. And I've seen some people blow it because their ego gets in the way, and the franchisor is like, you know what? I don't think we really want you to be a part of our brand. So that's an important thing for people to understand. And then, you know, you got to look at it as a partnership, right? As a franchisee, you're certainly not working for the franchisor. The franchisor's in a way working for you, but I mean, the best way to look at it is it's a partnership. And just like in any partnership, you want to really feel good about who you're partnered with. You want to get to know them. You want to, you know, there's got to be a trust factor there, and you've got to feel like the leadership of the company has a good vision for the future and where they're going to take the brand, and that's also something that you buy into as a franchisee. So that's an important part of the process. It's kind of a less tangible piece of it than, you know, understanding the economics and the potential ROI and, you know, what's the day-to-day support look like, all of these things. And I'm familiar with Buzz Brands. I mean, it doesn't get any better than Buzz Brands and the way they support their franchisees across their family of brands. So
yeah, great support teams. And I mean, these guys built Mosquito Joe to 300+ locations. They know what they're doing, and they've taken that know-how and that infrastructure and put it into segments and built brands that they believe in.
Yeah. I mean, it's big criteria, right? And like it can make a difference, you know, who's behind the company. Like, you know, we're looking at picking up another franchise business in the service space. You know, we're going to meet with them next week, actually, as of the time of recording this. They're new. They've only got a handful of franchisees open and operating, right? It's not a very proven business at this point, which would be a lot riskier, in my opinion, if you didn't kind of go through the process of understanding, you know, what's there today, how are they supporting their franchisees, and also understand the founder and what's his vision for the future, and also what's his experience to date. Well, in this particular case, this founder's built a franchise company to several hundred franchisees before, you know, had a very nice exit to private equity. It's not his first rodeo, right? So that gives us a lot more confidence to, you know, in all likelihood, move forward with a concept that's just not, you know, been around long enough to really be proven, but the recipe is there. The framework for success is there, which gives us the confidence that it could be a very good fit. So it's an important thing to understand as you're going through this process and evaluating a franchise business. I mean, what are some of the other things that, you know, for other brands? I think you mentioned complementary businesses, which to me, I love that strategy. What is it about kind of the complements that you see that as being a good part of your strategy, having complementary businesses? Why do you like that approach?
Yeah, you know, and I've got some clients that are franchise owners of one system, and we talk about diversifying their portfolio. So, you know, yeah, there's a few different paths. You know, for us, I think having that core team, being able to utilize them at full capacity by spreading them across multiple brands, providing them with a career path where they make it and opening it when the other brands, you know, is part of it. Yep. Ultimately, we're creating jobs and we're serving clients. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And, you know, in the process, you know, doing well for our investors and for ourselves. But, you know, I love the aspect, especially right now, of creating jobs. But having complementary brands where they're able to move back and forth. I mean, again, just the economies of scale on the back end, you know, maybe even sending out a mailer that has, you know, both brands mm-hmm. on it. You know, yeah, there's a lot of a lower cost of acquisition with referrals. So that's our tactic. So whether it be plumbing, HVAC, roof repair, you know, kitchen remodeling, pull out shelving. You know, I think there's a lot of synergy.
Yeah, there is. I mean, in these service-based businesses, they're typically very low overhead. And one of the biggest variables that determines how profitable the business is, a lot of times it comes down to your marketing and how cost-effectively you can acquire new clients. And so, you know, to your point, if you've got multiple businesses that provide complementary services, kind of cross-pollinate clientele, you can combine a lot of marketing, you can cross train employees and teams. I mean, to me, it makes a lot of sense. It's a lot of what we're trying to do, you know, here in the Wilmington area. We're not looking to go buy, you know, five or six more territories of a business that we're already involved in and spread ourselves too thin. We want to really focus on the areas where we've already established a good reputation for ourselves as business owners. We've got a loyal client base that we've already proven ourselves to, done great work for. We're just going to keep adding complimentary services. And the other thing I love about these service businesses, anything home service or home improvement related, is like most homeowners have had terrible experiences with any sort of a home service or home improvement provider, right? So that's a little bit of a hole to dig out of at first, but the bar is set so low to come in and exceed their expectations. And it's, you can wow a client. And once you do, then they're like, holy crap, I actually found a service company that shows up when they say they're going to show up. They did what they said they were going to do in the time frame they said they were going to do it. The price didn't go up on me along the way. And then they're like, hey, I need this done. Do you guys do that by chance? And it's like, we've kind of just been trying to listen to our clients and figure out, all right, what are some of the most common requests that we're getting for other services, and then that kind of points us in the right direction in terms of, all right, what business do we want to get into next?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love what you guys are doing. And, you know, like you said, I mean, these are fragmented markets largely in home services, property services, and you come in with a national brand, you get the leverage, buying power, the processes, the branding.
Technology, you know, usually.
I do think, you know, you have to kind of, there's some people say, hey, I don't want to be buy into a national franchise, or I don't want to buy from one. I'd rather support the local mom and pops. So I think communicating that, hey, this is locally owned.
Sure. Yeah.
Go out, get involved in Chamber of Commerce, support mm-hmm. the Little League baseball team, sponsor them. I mean, get out there in the community, let them know, locally owned, put a face with a name, like you said, building that reputation in a small geographic area and going deep rather than wide. I think that's absolutely the right path.
Yeah, 100%. Talk to me a little bit more about something that you mentioned earlier, because I want to make sure we hit on this a little bit more, because I think it's so important to understand. And in the conversations I'm having with people, it's clear to me that not as many people understand this concept as they should. Talk to me more about what you meant earlier when you said trading time for money.
Yeah, you know, I've got some clients that are doing $1 million a year right now in active income. You know, one's a surgeon, another's a business owner. In each case, though, they're trading time for money. And I'll tell them to their face that, hey, that's great. You're doing well and, you know, providing. But ultimately, you're trading time for money. I personally want to make money when I'm not having to put the time in. And so right now, I'm putting in a lot of time, but it's leading me to a path of additional freedom, if you will,
yeah,
that will really allow us to maintain that same lifestyle, invest the way we want to, but not have to trade time for every dollar that we bring in.
Yeah, I think it's important, right? Because, and you said, you know, there's business owners out there. And in fact, I mean, you know, what you and I do with our consulting businesses is trading time for money, right? If we're not working, there's no income happening, right? But we both also have other businesses at work that are working for us, even when we're not working. And I think that's really the difference between being a business owner and being like a solopreneur, right? I mean, and there's nothing wrong with being a solopreneur. It all depends on what your goals are. But I just think a very important distinguishment to make is, are you building something that has at least has the potential to become bigger than just you and that can work for you even when you're not working? Or are you, you know, running your own little business or consulting or sole proprietorship where, you know, you're not working for someone else. You don't have to answer for someone else. But if you're not working, there's no income. And it's important, you know, if what you're really chasing is, you know, this kind of freedom and especially financial freedom where you've got numerous streams of income and, you know, it's at least relatively passive, you've got to build a business, right? You've got to build something that's bigger than just you. And you need to sooner rather than later put yourself in a position where you're working on the business, not in the business. So it's just, I wanted to, you know, kind of hear your thoughts on that a little bit more because it's important. And I think a lot of people don't always grasp that. I know as I start working through with people, that's kind of some of the first criteria we talk about. Like, hey, what are you looking for here? Are you looking to buy yourself a job or are you looking for something that you can really scale and turn into a business that's working for you? There's no right or wrong answer. Right. I mean, for some people, quote unquote, buying yourself a job through a franchise is great, right? Because it gets you out of corporate America, it gets you away from working for someone else. It certainly gives you more control over your time and your schedule and all of these things. But, you know, it may not provide that passive income at some point. And then you've also got to take into account exit strategy, right? If it's just you, you don't really have a business to sell.
Yeah. Now I've got a client that's a franchise owner. It's an inspection service and it's all him. And I think you make a good point there. And something that I do remind clients of oftentimes is, yeah, it's passive income or semi-passive. We know nothing's passive until
sure.
You built it out. But, you know, you're creating an income stream, but there's also an exit value. And private equity and others love franchising for the predictability and the support behind it and the being able to transfer ownership, like you said. So when I share with people, you know, that you can get a couple of multiples off of either, you know, your EBITDA or maybe it's one-time sales in the home services space, mm-hmm. You're building an asset. You're not just building an income stream. Then a lot of times people forget that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very important distinguishment to make. It doesn't mean that there's one right way and one wrong way. It all depends on the person and what they're trying to accomplish. But nonetheless, it's a distinguishment that needs to be understood. Hey man, what else have we not hit on that we should have hit on today or that you'd like to talk a little bit about?
Yeah, no, I think we've covered a lot. I mean, really what I'm seeing in the market right now is interest coming from multiple sources. You've got your traditional kind of later stage in your career type that are concerned about unemployment potentially looming. You've got others that say, hey, got a little extra capital, want to put it to work. You've got, like you said, I've got a number of clients in their 30s that say, hey, I'm I've spent this time during COVID thinking about the path I'm on and, you know, want to choose a path to freedom, you know, and be able to get after it. And then, you know, the group that I'm working a lot with right now is those investors to say, hey, where do I park, you know, capital and get a return, and, you know, helping them find some very passive style opportunities to get behind candidates.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of people out there right now in particular that are really kind of assessing where their livelihood's coming from right now. I mean, COVID opened a lot of people's eyes, unfortunately, to the fact that, you know, as an employee, you're expendable. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you weren't doing your job well or you weren't a top performer for your company. It means in some cases, things completely outside of your control or even outside of the company's control happen. And it results in the company having to make decisions based on their bottom line. And sometimes that results in your position being eliminated. So I think there's a lot of people that have been through that or seen other people go through that. And they're starting to reevaluate, you know, hey, what can I do to take a little more control, you know, as a business owner? And I've said this on the podcast, but I think it's worth hitting on again. You know, as a business owner, you're never going to have complete control over everything, right? I mean, COVID happened to all of us, right? I mean, there's no getting around it, but you have a lot more control than you do as an employee. Like my wife and I, I'm sure your wife and you never sat around the dinner table after, you know, everything with COVID started going on. It was like, well, you know, we could lay ourselves off. You know, that's one option, right? Like that conversation didn't happen in our house, right? It was like, hey, what are we going to do to figure out how to keep our businesses, you know, moving and, you know, we understand what's going on and then focus on what we can control, right? So I think there's a lot of people in that boat in addition to kind of some of the other areas of interest that you just mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I agree.
Well, this is good, man. I always enjoy catching up with you and appreciate you making time for this. Before I let you go, we got to hit the lightning round. I'm not going to let you off the hook without hitting the lightning round, which is just the same four questions that I ask every guest that comes on the podcast. So the first question of the lightning round is simply, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received? And that could be in business or just general life advice.
A lot of the advice it came from my high school basketball coach, and there are a number of things he said. Let's see, here's one of them. Good, better, best. Never let it rest till your good is your better and your better is your best. The idea of constant improvement, winners do what losers don't want to, so.
I like that. That's good.
I'll stop there.
That would take me a while to memorize that without messing it up. So kudos on that. But no, I love it. I mean, it's well said. Perfect advice. All right. Next question is, do you have any sort of a morning routine? Anything that you try to do every morning to prime yourself for a successful day?
Back when I was in the corporate world, I would exercise in the morning. Now I exercise later in the day because I can. But no, I wake up, you know, around 5:30 before the family's up and spend some time reflecting and, you know, reading the Bible, reading other sources and kind of getting my head in the game and planning out my day. So those are some of my favorite hours with a cup of coffee and kind of getting things in place.
Yeah, I think that quiet time is important in the morning to kind of gather your thoughts, especially before the phone starts ringing and the emails start chirping and all the demands of the day start. I think that's huge. And I'm with you. I like a good mid-afternoon workout. Kind of helps me finish the day with a clear head and a little more energy than if I work out in the morning or at night or something like that. And it is nice to have the flexibility to say, hey, I'm going to crank out a workout here at 2 p.m. or whatever the case may be. What book are you reading right now?
Gosh, that's a great question. I am reading quite a few books, and sometimes I don't finish books. So, and most of them are audiobooks during workouts.
Yeah.
Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill is one that I started back again yesterday. It's been years since I've read it, and it's just so timeless. And I think it's a good primer to kind of get your head in the right space.
Yeah, it's probably the fourth time at least that one's been mentioned on this podcast. Cool. Wow. Yeah, it's a classic. I try to read it once a year. I think I read it 3 or 4 months ago, and I think that was my fourth time reading it. So it's one I try to revisit once a year. And I'm with you. I do a lot of audio books. I usually have a couple books going at a time, Audible. And I try to have a like hard copy book going too. But you know, I used to always try to like plow through a book because I had it. But I've gotten to the point where if I get like a third of the way into it and it's just not doing it for me, like put it back on the shelf and find something that you enjoy. There's too many books.
I'll give you a little hack here. You can pay me later. Instead of Audible, use Scribd, Scribd.
Okay.
Download the app. Massive collection. It's got almost everything that Audible has. Unlimited downloads of audiobooks every month, magazines, regular books, whatever you want. So I don't get paid by them, but I should. $8.99 a month. Best deal.
Really? For unlimited?
Scribd.
All right. That's a good deal. While we're talking books, I'll share this one with you. It was just recommended to me by Luke Sampson. You know Luke.
Okay, yeah.
Doesn't Hurt to Ask by Trey Gowdy, congressman from South Carolina, but former prosecuting attorney. So I haven't read it yet, but it's next on my list. He said it was fantastic.
Awesome.
All right, last question, and then I will let you go, my man. What is your definition of freedom, and are you living it?
Again, I currently have the hardest boss I've ever had, so I don't always feel the freedom, but I know I am living it. We are living life on our terms, and in those early morning hours, I step back and remind myself just how blessed we are to be able to do some of the things in our personal life that we're doing, and get to work for a great boss. He may be hard, but he's great.
That's right, and he's not going anywhere, right? So you might as well just get used to it. But no, I think that's important, right? And you know, what you said is, you know, take some time every day, whether it's in the morning or whenever, but take some time to kind of step back and appreciate, you know, how far you've come, right? Because one of the things I think is, and this comes, because I ask this question to everyone that comes on the podcast, right? And everyone has a slightly different definition of freedom, but most people, you know, when I ask, are you living it? Some people will say yes, but most people kind of say something along the lines of, I'm getting there, right? I'm kind of there, but I still have more work to do. Like there's still more freedom that I can accomplish. And I think that's right. I mean, you're never probably going to wake up one day and say, all right, boom, I've done everything I want to do. I've accomplished everything I want to. Like I'm set. There's nothing else I need to work on. So I do think it's important to step back and kind of realize how far you've come, what you have accomplished, and be appreciative of it. I mean, I've, you know, I wake up some days and I'm like, God, I gotta do a podcast today. I gotta walk upstairs to my office and, or I gotta put shoes on and leave the house to go to like an actual meeting. And it's like, wait a second. 4 years ago, I was hopping in the car at 7:30 every morning and driving into an office that I worked at, you know, for 9 hours a day and then driving, you know, it's like, just got to have some perspective. And I think that'll take you a long way. So,
yeah, that's what I was going to mention there. In my ripe old age of 40, something I've come to really of late is the idea of not just having a to-do list and being goal-oriented, because that's kind of how I'm wired, but very much a to-be list. And who is it that I'm becoming, and where am I on that pendulum? And then who do I want my kids to be? And being intentional, recognizing we only have them for a short time.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And something that's easier said than done, right? In the midst of all the demands that typically get thrown at a certain day, but something that's definitely important that you need to be intentional about. So I'm with you on that. Well, hey man, again, really appreciate this. This was fantastic. No doubt everyone that listens in is going to get tons of value from everything that you've shared with us today. Where can people connect with you? Where can people learn more about your companies? Oh, the other thing, we can mention it real quick here. You put a book out not that long ago. Sorry, I meant to bring that up earlier. Tell us briefly about your book and where people can check it out if they want to.
Yeah, you'll love the name, The Franchise Path. And it's a fictional story of multiple guys that get into franchising at an early age and teaches a lot of principles in the book and a lot of good content. It's not available just yet. It has been written. The acknowledgements are there. The cover's done. It's literally on the half-yard line. And
okay. All right.
We should have it out shortly. But, no, we'd love to connect with people. LinkedIn's probably a great spot to do that initially, or go to our website, FranbridgeCapital.com. My email address is john.austinson@FranbridgeCapital.com. But, yeah, we'd love to connect. Honored to be here with you, Wes. Appreciate you having me on. And I love what you're doing. And keep up the great work.
Likewise, man. Appreciate it. We'll link all your info in the show notes and be on the lookout for The Franchise Path to come out. But thank you, man. Keep doing what you're doing. Love it. And I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Sounds great.
Thanks. Thanks for dropping in with me on this episode of the Path to Freedom podcast. I hope you got a ton of value and learned something new. And if you did, please make sure to subscribe and follow the Path to Freedom podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And also, please share with someone else that may also get value from it. And if you're interested in learning more about how you can take steps to getting into business for yourself, I'd love to speak with you. Connect with me online at pathtofreedom.com. That's path, the number two, FRDM.com, or shoot me an email at wes@pathtofreedom.com, spelled the same way. And if you know anyone else that may be interested in speaking with me, I'd love to meet them. Please forward this podcast along to them and encourage them to reach out. Thanks again for joining me today, and I'll see you next time. Now go drop in.